Alright, this is chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. This is called Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw. And you can have my arm if you want. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
It looked like the end of Ron and Hermione's friendship. Each was so angry with the other that Harry couldn't see how they'd ever make up. Ron was enraged that Hermione had never taken Crookshank's attempts to eat Scabbers seriously. He hadn't bothered to keep a close enough watch on him, and was still trying to pretend that Crookshanks was innocent by suggesting that Ron look for Scabbers underneath all the boys' beds. Meanwhile, Hermione maintained fiercely that Ron had no proof that Crookshanks had eaten Scabbers, and that Ginger Hairs might have been there since Christmas, and that Ron had been prejudiced against her cat ever since Crookshanks had landed on Ron's head in the magical menagerie. Personally, Harry was sure that Crookshanks had eaten Scabbers, and when he tried to point out to Hermione that the evidence all pointed that way, she lost her temper with Harry, too. "Oh, say, okay, side with Ron, I knew you would," she said shrilly. "First the fireball, now Scabbers, everything's my fault, isn't it? Just leave me alone, Harry, I've got a lot of work to do." Ron had taken the loss of his rat very hard indeed. "Come on, Ron, you were always saying how boring Scabbers was," said Fred bracingly. "And he's been off color for ages. He was wasting away. It was probably better for him to snuff it quickly. One swallow, he probably didn't even feel a thing." "Fred," said Ginny indignantly. "All he did was eat and sleep, Ron. You said it yourself," said George. "He bit Goyle for us once," said Ron miserably. "Remember, Harry?"
"Yeah, that's true," said Harry.
"His finest hour," said Fred, unable to keep a straight face. "Would the scar on Goyle's finger stand as a lasting tribute to his memory? Oh, come on, Ron, get yourself down to Hogsmeade and buy a new rat. What's the point of moaning?" In a last-ditch attempt to cheer Ron up, Harry persuaded him to come along to the Gryffindor team's practice before the Ravenclaw match, so that he could have a ride on the Firebolt after they'd finished. That did seem to take Ron's mind off Scabbers for a moment. "Great, can I try to shoot a few goals on it?" And so they set off for the Quidditch field together. Madame Hooch, who was still overseeing Gryffindor practices to keep an eye on Harry, was just as impressed with the Firebolt as everyone else had been. She took it in her hands before takeoff, and gave them the benefit of her professional opinion. "Look at the balance on it. If the Nimbus series has a fault, it's slight list to the tail end. Often you find that they develop a drag after a few years. They've updated the handle, too. A bit slimmer than the Queen Sweeps. Reminds me of the old silver arrows. Pity they stopped making them. I learned to fly on one. A very fine old broom it was, too." She continued in this vein for some time until Wood said, "Madame Hooch, is it okay if Harry has the Firebolt back? We need to practice." "Oh, right. Here you are then, Potter," said Madame Hooch. "I'll sit over with Weasley." She and Ron left the field to sit in the stadium, and the Gryffindor team gathered around Wood for his final instructions for tomorrow's match. "Harry, I've just found out who Ravenclaw is playing as Seeker. It's Cho Chang. She's a fourth year, and she's pretty good. I really hoped she wouldn't be fit. She's had some problems with injuries." Wood scowled at his displeasure that Cho Chang had made a full recovery, and then said, "On the other hand, she rides a Comet 62, which is going to look like a joke next to the Firebolt. He gave Harry's broom a fervent admiration, and then said, "Okay, everyone, let's go." And at long last, Harry mounted his Firebolt and kicked off from the ground. It was better than he'd ever dreamed. The Firebolt turned with the lightest touch. It seemed to obey his thoughts rather than his grip. It sped across the field at such speed that the stadium turned into a green and gray blur. Harry turned it so sharply that Alicia Spinett screamed, and then he went into a perfectly controlled dive, brushing the grassy field with his toes just before rising 30, 40, 50 feet into the air again. "Harry, I'm letting the snitch out," Wood called. Harry turned and raced a bludger toward the goalposts. He outstripped it easily, and then saw the snitch dart out from behind Wood. Within 10 seconds, he had caught it tightly in his hand. The team cheered madly. Harry let the snitch go, gave it a minute's head start, and then tore after it, weaving in and out of the others. He spotted it lurking near Katie Bell's knee, looped her easily, and caught it again. It was the best practice ever. The team, inspired by the presence of the firebolt in their midst, performed their best moves faultlessly. By the time they hit the ground again, Wood didn't have a single criticism to make, which, as George Weasley pointed out, was a first. "I can't see what's going to stop us tomorrow," said Wood. "Not unless, Harry, you sorted out your Dementor problem, haven't you?" "Yeah," said Harry, thinking of his feeble Patronus and wishing it were stronger. "The Dementors won't turn up again, Oliver. Dumbledore'd go ballistic," said Fred confidently.
"Well, I hope not," said Wood. "Anyway, good work, everyone. Let's get back to the tower and turn in early."
"I'm staying out for a bit. Ron wants a go on the firebolt," Harry told Wood, while the rest of the team headed off to the locker rooms. Harry strode over towards Ron, who vaulted the barrier to the stands and came to meet him. Madame Hooch had fallen asleep in her seat. "Here you go," said Harry, handing Ron the firebolt. Ron, in an expression of ecstasy on his face, mounted the broom and zoomed off into the gathering darkness while Harry walked around the edge of the field watching him. Night had fallen before Madame Hooch awoke with a start, told Harry and Ron off for not waking her, and insisted that they go back to the castle. Harry shouldered the firebolt, and he and Ron walked out of the shadowy stadium, discussing the firebolt's superbly smooth action and its phenomenal acceleration, its pinpoint turning. They were halfway toward the castle when Harry, glancing to his left, saw something that made his heart turn over, a pair of eyes gleaming out of the darkness. Harry stopped dead, his heart banging against his ribs.
"What's the matter?" said Ron.
Harry pointed.
Ron pulled out his wand and muttered, "Lumos."
A beam of light fell across the grass, hit the bottom of a tree, and illuminated its branches. There, crouching among the building leaves, was Crookshanks.
"Get out of here," roared Ron, and he stooped down and seized a stone lying in the grass. But before he could do anything else, Crookshanks had vanished with one swish of his long ginger tail.
"See," said Ron furiously, chucking the stone down again. "She's still letting him wander about whenever he wants, probably washing down scabbers with a couple of birds now."
Harry didn't say anything.
He took a deep breath as relief seeped through him. He'd been sure for a moment that those eyes had belonged to the Grim. They set off for the castle once more. Slightly ashamed of his moment of panic, Harry didn't say anything to Ron, nor did he look left or right until they had reached the well-lit entrance hall. And I think we'll stop there. I love you so much, my kitty. So beautiful, girl. I love your hair. I love your eyes. I love your cute little nose, your cute little mouth. You're so wonderful, Carrie. You're so sweet to me. Sleep up. Good night.